Good morning and welcome to the Daily Ding. Happy first game of the finals day to everybody out there. We appreciate you guys sticking with us during the longest NBA season in history. I'm Dave DeFore, joined by my man Big Woz. What's up, Wozny?
I'm good, man. It's crazy for you to say that the finals are upon us. It makes me think about LA Clippers media day last year, like a year ago. You know, that was my first ever media day. A couple of things I remember from that day. One was that this was the first time I'd ever seen Kawhi Leonard in person, and this dude is jacked. I'm like, this is
he's
a beast. Like, you don't have an appreciation for how built that guy is. I remember that. I remember being sort of awestruck by Kawhi's physique. And I just remember the confidence that permeated throughout the entire Clippers organization, from front office to, you know, guys who work on the media side to just everybody. There was just a confidence emanating from that room. It was from within the Clippers organization, the doc, to everybody, to, you know, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. They seemed very confident. They seemed very comfortable. Very, like, they just knew they were going to go on to do great things this year.
And here we are.
So hearing you say that makes me think about that media day.
Here we are, and the Clippers are not there. Funny how that stuff works out. Lakers and Heat, man.
Yep.
This is, you know, I actually thought the Lakers would make the finals all year. There were parts where it was like, oh man, the Clippers have a lot of talent and, you know, you can't go against Kawhi. But the way the Lakers just came out of the gate, opening day, you know, just ready to roll everybody. I thought that setting that sort of tone early was really important for them. And meanwhile, the Heat kind of snuck up on everybody. You know, they were the fifth seed. This team is completely different than it was before the trade deadline. I mean, completely different. And then obviously things in the bubble have been tilted to the extreme, especially for Miami. The Bucks, you know, obviously were no contest for what they had going on. You know, Bucks Lakers was my thing all year. And, you know, the Lakers were able to pull it out somehow. Those underdog Lakers.
Yeah, you know what? I've been participating in a bit of a meme slash bit slash
it's a good bit though.
Comedy routine on Twitter about the Lakers being underdogs, which isn't obviously not the case, right? But I think there's a little truth to my trolling in the sense that, and I'm going to say this over and over again, people trashed the Lakers offseason. They just did. That was the feeling. Coming out of the summer, coming out of the pursuit of Kawhi Leonard, there was this sense that Kawhi very shrewdly strung them along as great free agents were sort of getting snatched up while they waited for him to make the decision that he was always going to come to, as a way for Kawhi to stick it to the Lakers and LeBron, who were essentially would become his chief rivals out west and in his own city. Right. They had to settle for, you know, Danny Green and Rajon Rondo and Avery Bradley and, you know, Jared Dudley. These moves.
Dwight Howard was. We made
was
fun of
actually,
him.
Of course, was in Dwight, who ended up being probably their most important role player this season because of what he did for their defense. They only signed him after Boogie Cousins went down.
Right.
Right. And of course, there was the chat that they gave up too much for Anthony Davis. It's easy to forget now, Dave, but in February, when the New Orleans trade never went through, and of course, Magic is quitting on the last day of the season, and it was just like, wow, the Lakers are an embarrassment. All the stuff, the back and forth in the press, Rob Pelinka doesn't know the cap rules, and all of this stuff. They got killed. Okay, and so there was a sense going into the season, and, you know, people like my buddy Bond Temps was like, I wouldn't be surprised if this team didn't finish over 500, you know, and I love Tim Bond Temps, and I don't mean to denigrate his Western New York accent, but he was very voiceful. My man Windhorst over there at ESPN, very skeptical. A lot of people within the company were skeptical. And there was this sense, even after the Lakers started, very hot start, like 17-3 or something crazy like that. And even though, you know, I think Haberstroh or Pelton, I'm sorry, I don't remember who it was that first wrote this piece, but it was essentially like, after the first 20 games, we basically got what we got, right? Like, the teams that are good after the first 20 historically are the teams that are good by the time the season ends, so on and so forth. And even still, there was just this creeping Lakers skepticism all season long. As they established themselves as one of the top tier teams, I think a pecking order was established within the minds of who I call NBA thought leaders, that look, there's the three teams at the top, the Lakers, the Clippers, and the Bucks. And Dave, you know this, there was a sense that the two teams for real, were really the Clippers and the Bucks. Those were the teams. Lakers skepticism basically permeated the whole entire season. And then, of course, the season ends abruptly. We restarted in the bubble. They clinch basically two games into the bubble and proceed to do nothing. They coast for the rest of the bubble after clinching their seeding. And everybody, that same creeping skepticism that started in the summer of July 2019 continues, like, well, this might be the best eighth seed of all time. Now, they're getting back Nurkic, and they're doing this. The Lakers are going to have this is going to be a such and such and such.
To be fair, Waz, people started having creeping doubts about the Bucks because of their bubble play, too, and they happened to be right. So, you know, you can't just discount.
That's fair.
Because we've done this before with LeBron.
But that's the difference,
though,
Dave.
We give them the pass for coasting, and then when those problems that are present, because, you know, they coasted, like their playoff defense in Cleveland the last few years, right? Where they struggled a little bit in the first round against the Pacers. And it was
sure.
Like, well, this is kind of what they did all year, but we thought they'd flip a switch. So,
make the finals, Dave, is what I'm saying. Like, the last few years, LeBron's teams lost to the greatest ensemble of talent in the history of the game.
Right.
Right? Like, the context matters, right? So the fact that the Lakers clinched and treated everything else as an exhibition, I thought, whatever. We don't need to relitigate that. I'm just giving the listener a history of the Lakers season thus far. And of course, Houston, there was those creeping suspicions. The Rockets matchup is a bad one for them. They're going to spread them out. They're going to do this. Who's going to go
harder? I don't know why anybody thought that.
The team that barely could beat OKC?
Right.
It was insanity. But again,
it's
I'm
not like the Lakers don't have talent, though.
No,
see, this
but
is my
the
thing.
Origins, you could, Dave, is in the same thing. There was a sense that this team was never that good. That nobody thought they were that good, and they kept saying it, kept doing it. They kept finding reasons to pick against the Lakers.
LeBron legitimately could have won MVP this year, and sure. I do believe Giannis was the rightful MVP. But if LeBron had won, I don't think anybody could argue. They would have said, wow, it was a tough choice. Because I think even with Giannis clearly having a better season, it was still a tough choice because of the way LeBron plays, right? Like, leading the league in assists. I think that's a big deal, to score the way he does. They had a great defense, and guess what? He was a part of that. There were a lot of things there. I don't know how anybody could say, look at what LeBron just did, and he's got Anthony Davis on his team. And, you know, KCP is a good player. Danny Green, we know what he does in the playoffs. I don't care what he's done up to this point. Y'all know what's going to happen in the finals. Rondo is playing like playoff Rondo, which somehow happens. And I always say, it's not going to happen. And it just happens anyway.
Same.
Right?
Same.
You've got Caruso, who comes off the bench with great energy, who just fits into that system the way he cuts. I mean, him and LeBron have great chemistry. I don't know how you can watch that all year and say, oh, yeah, they're definitely not going to make the finals. I could get if you say that they might lose to the Clippers, even if they lost to the Nuggets, because the Nuggets are a good team. Like, the Lakers aren't perfect. And we've gotten so used to the Warriors and their perfection.
Yes.
Right?
We were used to a perfect juggernaut. We were used to a perfect favorite. Favorites are rarely perfect. Favorites are usually have flaws that can be exploited. Just like they're favorites because the most likely outcome might be a victory for them, but it's not the guaranteed outcome. And I think that's what went into all of the optimism for the Clippers. It's the sense that the favorite of the 3 years prior basically took them losing two of their top three to injury for them to lose.
Right.
Right. And so we were used to that level of dominance. So it's like, all right, this is the new favorite and they're going to dominate. But it's like, no, the history of the NBA is littered with favorites who didn't win. Right. And so I
think Cleveland Cavaliers, the first year the Warriors won.
Exactly.
Remember, they were the new super. They were going to be the new Heat.
Right.
The new super
exactly.
Team. And then the Warriors come out of nowhere.
Exactly. And, you know, I think that's what sort of the thought was all season long. And, you know, as the playoffs always show, your warts are going to show. And the Lakers have been able to withstand their warts and make it to the finals. Now, if we can get into the matchup, Dave, I think the Heat obviously present problems that they haven't faced thus far in the playoffs. I think with the exception of probably Houston, who could get to a level of great defense, although because of the nature of their squad, like the effort it requires for that collection of players to play great defense was so great. The effort required was so great. It was almost impossible for them to sustain it for 48 minutes. And that's the only sort of good, that's the only defense that could be categorized as good that the Lakers have faced so far in the playoffs. And I think Miami is the first time in the playoffs they're playing a bona fide great defense. And not just that the personnel is great, Dave. I know you and I both share an affinity for Eric Spoelstra's coaching ability. Like when you combine the personnel with that level of coaching, the Lakers haven't faced this problem yet.
Exactly. And if we're just looking on paper, talent for talent, I think the Lakers, because of LeBron and AD, I don't give a shit who else is on that roster. That's the talent matchup, right? Like there's already been a lot of, well, you know, if Miami role players can beat the Lakers. No.
Okay, I want to get
LeBron
into
and AD. Listen, they have to beat LeBron and AD. They don't have to beat the Lakers role players.
Right.
If Rondo scores 40 points, which he won't, right? Then okay, now you got maybe you got beat by a role player. But Miami is a team full of role players, I would argue. Yes, certainly they've got high-end talent. But we talked about this on Buds the other day. They didn't have a 20-point per game scorer in the regular season. Jimmy was at like 19.8 or something. So it's a great little stat that doesn't really mean a whole lot. But they have an egalitarian offense. Their guys are stars on defense when they're stars. You get Bam. You got Jimmy, who is like the greatest clutch player in the NBA for like the last 5 years. Kind of insane. And so they've got to beat LeBron and Anthony Davis. You let Alex Caruso take all the uncontested threes you want. Nobody cares. You got to contain LeBron and AD.
This is what people need to understand when you're talking about quote-unquote role players or non-stars. Just by the nature of LeBron's superstardom and, you know, however you want to describe his game, the role guys are not asked to do things that they are not good at doing. They're only asked to do the things that they're good at. Nobody else is good. Because the Lakers don't have anybody else besides LeBron and Rondo who can dribble the basketball, nobody else is tasked with initiating offense.
Right.
It's their job. So for 40 minutes of the game, it's LeBron initiating offense against you. It's LeBron trying to solve your defense. It doesn't matter that Danny Green can't handle. It doesn't matter that Kuzma can't do it. It doesn't matter that that's not in KCP's, you know, list of attributes. Because they're not asked to do that. Your role players have to do what they're asked to do, which in the Lakers' case is essentially make wide open shots.
That's
your job. And
now,
on
conversely,
offense,
though,
anyway, on offense.
All right. Defense is where it's going to be a problem.
Kicking ass on defense.
They have been, but they haven't played a team like this.
They haven't.
Five guys that all move. Now, Denver was pretty close. And I think L.A. struggled a little bit defensively with
Denver. Now, they were able to tighten up when they needed to, but there were soft spots there. So I do think it is an interesting matchup. And I think on paper, you pick the Lakers every single day. Then when you add the context of, okay, well, Spoelstra is the coach. Jimmy Butler and Bam are on that team. And the way that they use their role players like Duncan Robinson, very similar to the Lakers. They're not asking Duncan Robinson to go out there and run pick and roll.
No.
This is the difference between a franchise like Miami or what the Lakers have done this year compared to a team like the Clippers, where they're trying to get a guy like Landry Shamet to initiate offense. Landry Shamet in Miami could be Duncan Robinson.
Right.
He could be that for the Clippers.
Right.
But they just would give him the ball and tell him to do stuff. And we know that they weren't putting in the development time. They didn't practice. And I think that it's such a good point that you made, Waz. Good coaching, good organizations, they put their players in the best position to succeed. Mm-hmm. And both of these teams have done that all year. Difference is Miami made big changes at the trade deadline, like huge changes. Jay Crowder has been massive for them. I mean, super important. He's probably going to guard LeBron some in this series. I bet he's going to guard Anthony Davis some in this series. So they now have bodies that they didn't have.
The Lakers haven't faced a collection of defensive talent to the level of the Miami Heat yet in the playoffs. And so everybody keeps talking about the zone, which I honestly think if you put AD in the middle of a 2-3 zone and let him flow to you to death, that's not a recipe for success, in my opinion. That's the shot he wants to get to anyway. I just think they'll be able to switch up and diversify their looks enough that for the first time all playoffs, I believe the Lakers' offense will be bothered. I think what people
it's going to be guessing, right?
Yes.
They haven't had to do that yet.
The offense hasn't been made to be uncomfortable yet in the entire postseason. You know, the Houston Rockets, God bless them, the effort that they gave, their tallest guy was 6'8". That's just not going to get it done against AD. You're not making him uncomfortable that way. You have to fight length with length, and the Rockets didn't possess that personnel. Now, Miami, on the other hand, can do that. Bam Adebayo has probably been the best defensive player in the entire NBA playoffs, right? He's a DPOY-level defensive talent. And so I think, again, the Heat are going to present tough, tough matchups. You mentioned Crowder. Of course, Iguodala won an MVP for slowing LeBron down to 30-point triple-double in the finals. Don't even get me started on that. But aside from that, he's actually a good defender. You can feel at least mildly confident of leaving one guy on LeBron, because we know when you send two at LeBron, that's a recipe for poison. Poison is death for your defense. And so I like what they can do defensively. I just think the Lakers are going to stop them. That's what I think. I think the Lakers' defense, which hasn't gotten the glory throughout the playoffs, but they've been the best unit of the Lakers thus far, especially when you consider the offensive challenges that were presented to that defense by Denver, by Houston, by Portland, who we can all laugh at, but we know what they do is offense. And the Lakers stopped them. And so I think the Lakers' defense and Vogel, we praise Spo, Dave, but Vogel has been damn good in the playoffs with adjustments and and just coming up with schemes and strategies to stop guys.
The one issue is the 3-point shooting. Miami can really shoot the three, and I have concerns about the Lakers guarding on the perimeter. We know they can pack the paint, right? So we know that the pick and roll with Bam Adebayo and Goran Dragic probably not going to be as effective. Like, we know that going in, because you got Anthony Davis, you got Dwight Howard, you got LeBron, backline help, Superman. But if they can get guys open the way that they know how to do, running those wide pin downs, running those dribble handoffs, getting guys open shots, Miami has the ability to avalanche you when they get hot. Now, the Lakers can keep up because they're going to get their buckets inside. I mean, it's just going to happen. But I do wonder if Miami can get enough volume to create a math problem for the Lakers. But this series is going to be a chess match. Vogel is a really good coach. I mean, he's not on Spoelstra's level, but
Who you know, is? What is it?
Three or four coaches, maybe.
You know, exactly.
You know, in
exactly.
that top tier.
We're talking about the creme de la creme.
Right. I actually think Eric Spoelstra is one of the five or six best coaches to ever coach the game of basketball in a way that we can look at and say, yeah, that guy's a great coach.
Yeah,
which basically means
in the modern era, I would not disagree with you. He's an amazing coach.
Yeah. And he's pushed the envelope of the game of basketball. You know, I put him up there. It's like Mike D'Antoni and Greg Popovich. Just the way that, I mean, he has tested the boundaries
just
NBA
the concept of positionless basketball.
Yep.
The concept that he would invert Bosh and Braun in that Miami Heat offense and make Bosh the perimeter guy and Braun the post guy. I got too much love and respect for Spoelstra as a coach.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just think it is going to be a fascinating series, not just on the court, but I think the coaching chess match is going to be pretty good too. And Vogel's been fantastic all year. So this is shaping up to be one of my favorite finals ever, I think, because neither team is perfect. It kind of reminds me of the back-to-back Spurs-Heat series. Because we knew both teams weren't perfect. Because we'd already seen the Heat struggle in the finals even.
And you know what?
It wound up being that chess match.
We talked to our friend Tom Haberstroh on Hoops Adjacent today. That'll be out today as well. When you guys are hearing this, Hoops Adjacent will also be out. And we talked to Tom about the Lakers and the Heat and all of those things. And he said this Heat team actually reminds him of another Miami-related team, but it's the Dallas Mavericks of 2011. Just a collection of wily vets who were clicking at the right time, and they just have a winning sort of way about them. I don't know how to describe what the Heat are doing, because they haven't blown these teams out. They're just winning every game. You know, like, they're not overwhelming teams because they don't have that overwhelming talent. But the way to which they're playing team ball on both ends, you know, playing on a string, as Spoelstra likes to say, on defense, and just the movement, the way they can attack you from any single place, all three levels of the court and all five guys on the court at the same time. It's just, you know, it's just been amazing to watch. And I think the synergy around them is incredible, which is going to make this a closer series than, honestly, I think it has a right being. I know we have to move on to Doc Rivers.
Yeah.
But I think the Lakers are going to take this in six games. I think the defense is going to win the day. And I think LeBron is going to earn his fourth NBA championship, man.
I hope it goes seven. I'm really rooting for it to go seven, because I think it's going to wind up being an all-time finals series. It could be really, really fantastic. And in particular, because the two teams kind of arrived there the different, you know, in different ways. I mean, of course, Miami got Jimmy Butler as a free agent, but the rest of those guys, I mean, you know, they got Goran years ago. They tried to give him away before the season, and Dallas wouldn't take him. I just, you know, it's going to be a fascinating matchup, but I'm really looking forward to it.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Speaking of Doc Rivers, the Clippers and Doc Rivers have decided to part ways. Waz, Jovan Buha has been on this all year for us over at The Athletic. Got a great story up right now that lays down the whole timeline after their exit from the bubble and sort of the thinking of the Clippers. This felt like it probably should have happened, but none of us expected it to happen.
Yeah, I think, you know, NBA teams tend to be risk averse. The Clippers undoubtedly had one of the three or four best teams in the NBA, put together a dope season, even as underachieving as they were. And Doc is, you know, universally accepted as a good NBA coach. If you don't think he's you know, Pat Riley, a Red Auerbach, or Phil Jackson, that's fine. But nobody could accuse Doc Rivers of being a bad NBA coach. He's good. And so it's very risky to get rid of Doc Rivers in this moment. That being said, I just think with great expectations come great consequences. You know, and sometimes those consequences are good, right? Like, let the Clippers had gone out and won the championship this year. Toast to the town, toast to the NBA. Doc Rivers is a made man for life there. And so on and so forth. Just by winning, what, 9 more games than they did this season, right? But because things fell the way that they did, it's going the other way. Doc Rivers is gone. There's going to have to be a sort of culture reset within that organization because, let's face it, Dave, Kawhi Leonard and Paul George may be the Clippers' 2 best players. They are not their leaders. They don't set the tone. That was Doc Rivers doing that. And to a slightly lesser extent, the holdovers from that scrappy team from last season, as far as Lou Williams and Patrick Beverley, right? And so I think what you're seeing here is a shifting of that culture in there. And there's no better way to achieve that, Dave, than having been embarrassed and have egg all over your face publicly, you know, and get your names dragged through the mud. I think these guys are going to be determined. I think they're going to come back with a better attitude. I don't think, you know, I doubt that Kawhi Leonard's going to eat shrimp for 2 hours before he talks to media after games next season. Or at least that's what I'm hoping.
That's still happening, bro. Yeah, no. That stuff's not changing. That stuff's not changing. I will tell you right now, my expectation is there are going to be wholesale roster changes. Mm. I think Lou Williams and Trez Harrell probably won't be there next year.
Okay.
We'll see about Patrick Beverley. I mean, he is like an asset for them if they want to make some upgrades. But they need to upgrade that roster first and foremost. But they definitely need to figure out the leadership issue. And maybe if they promote Ty Lue. Ty Lue's that guy. You know, he was there all year.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Here's my question, though, for you, Waz. If you had locker room issues and Ty Lue was there, do you feel like promoting him to the head coach, like, is he sort of tainted by this season? Like, Dave, that's what I would be worried about.
The obvious answer is it worked in Cleveland.
And listen, Ty Lue's a fantastic coach and would probably do a better job coaching this team, I think.
It's a similar setup. Like, they got rid of the coach of a 30-10 team, Dave. Okay? Like, the team was successful. And they got rid of him. And they brought Ty Lue in. And guess what? One, I'm on record as saying this. I'm of the belief that Ty Lue is the best coaching candidate on the market.
For sure.
Just
I agree
his championship with you. Pedigree. Obviously, like, you cannot say he didn't coach his ass off in that 2016 finals. And then getting to the finals subsequently, of course, 2017 Cavs are going to be lost to history, but that was a damn good team.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Kyrie leaves, and that team had no business in anybody's NBA finals. And they got to the finals again, right? I think Ty Lue did a great job. I think about 2016 a lot because this guy had the balls. Remember we talked about Mike D'Antoni not having the juice to bench Russell Westbrook because it was the best thing to do for his team. Ty Lue was playing Richard Jefferson geriatric ass over Kevin Love in the finals because he knew that was the best way for his team to win. I don't care about your all-stars, all-NBA, your salary. We're bringing in a veteran minimum guy to play minutes over you.
Well, they were able to run LeBron's little pet elbow rub.
Exactly.
Richard Jefferson with that lob pass all the time.
Come on now. And again, my last point, because I am blabbing on here, is he commanded the respect of LeBron James. Mm-hmm. He took no shit from LeBron James as a rookie coach. And so he has the pedigree. He's a former player, so he has that cachet. He's shown his coaching chops at the highest level. I just think he's the obvious candidate.
Yeah, I mean, he's. I agree with you. He's the best coach on the market right now. I just worry about the taint being left over from this previous season. Here's the other thing. It's hard to build chemistry if you don't have a chemistry builder. LeBron is a chemistry builder. The Lakers are able to make this wholesale roster change that they made with a new coach. Remember, Frank Vogel, this is his first year.
Yep.
They threw everything out too last summer to a certain degree. But LeBron is instant chemistry with everybody. I mean, he is literally a chemistry set. Kawhi Leonard's not that. Paul George is not that. You know, we saw Kawhi go to Toronto, and it's easier to add a major piece to an existing
Toronto
ecosystem.
Essentially plugged him into their
exactly
what they it's had. Like KD, they had a system.
It's like KD going to the Warriors.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And so there was not a lot of thought into the chemistry aspect, and is so important for basketball. I know that a lot of nerds don't think it is, but you know, my favorite nerd, Seth Partnow, agrees on this. That chemistry is an unknowable quantity, but you know it when you got it, and you know it when you don't. And the Clippers don't have it. So they've got to figure out a way to add that somehow. I think it's gonna have to be a player. You know, I wonder, maybe they'd be down for a reunion with Chris Paul. I don't know how they'd work that out, but they need someone like that who can come in and be that chemistry builder guy. Because they're just a collection of parts right now. They've got some really high-end parts. That's great. But, you know, you're driving a beat-up Pinto. You got to put the nice parts on a nicer car.
Yeah, so. I think, you know, the guys have to work towards it. I'm of the opinion that, you know, even if you move on from Lou Will and Montrez, you move on from him, you find it. Because backup big is basically the most easiest position to find on the market on a pretty cost-effective deal. And so I don't think they'll be missing Montrez per se. I think they have enough there. They should bring back Marcus Morris, you know, if just not just for the assets that they got rid of for him.
Mm-hmm.
And the pieces for a highly competent offense there. And defensively, man, Zoob was damn good defensively in the playoffs. They have the pieces to be a competent defense. It's competent to great defense. I think they're right there. I think it'd be foolhardy to do some sort of wholesale. We need to break this whole thing up.
I think Lou and Trez are gone. That's my gut feeling on this. And you brought up Zoo. You know, they were better with him on the court. And I think that ultimately that is part of what got Doc out of there, was that he was so loyal to his guys. That even when they were not playing well, which Trez did not play well, he still stuck with them. I mean, we saw him even in that elimination game after the Nuggets had abused him. He still was playing him. Yep. Yeah, I mean, and so, you know, ultimately that loyalty wound up, I think, cost him his job. But it's going to be – they've got an interesting offseason coming up. And it just – I can't imagine this was their plan when they had that great, quote-unquote, great offseason last year.
I
gotta hit the reset button again.
I think there are, you know, probably 26 teams that would love to be in the Clippers position right now, to be honest with you. They're right there. They're banging on the door of championship contention. So I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, it's not the end of the world. That's gonna do it for today's show. Very excited that the finals are here. We've got all your favorite podcasts, and everybody is putting out finals content all week. Of course, the Athletic NBA show. We got Hoops Adjacent that just dropped this morning. Tom Haverstraw, the special guest with Waz and DA. We got No Dunks. We got Point of Contention coming out Thursday. We got Nerder coming out on Friday, and we'll break down game one of the finals there. If you're not a member of the Athletic, now's the time to sign up. You don't want to miss all of our finals coverage. And get all of our podcasts ad-free. Go to theathletic.com/dailyding and you can sign up for $1 a month right now. Theathletic.com/dailyding. Thank you guys for waking up with us all season long. Waz, send us home.
Ding, ding, ding-a-lings.